Right now it's time to visit with our good friends from the BerkshireEdge.com. News and information out of the South County area, available 24 hours a day at the BerkshireEdge.com. And on Wednesday morning, we are joined by David and Marcy. We also rebroadcast it during the weekend, but this is the live edition, and we say good morning to David and Marcy.
Good morning to you, too.
Good morning, Stanley Steamer, as well.
That's right. All right. So now, let's take a look at some of the headlines here that, once again, we always remind people that in this 25-minute segment, we just take a few of the stories that you'll find at the BerkshireEdge.com. There's tons more information there, then we just pick out a few of them. And when I say we, I mean they. David and Marcy pick out the stories. So we'll start off with our good friends at the Housatonic Waterworks.
Yes. Speaking of Stanley Steamers, this is the Stanley Steamer of water systems here in the little village of privately owned water system, still a privately owned water system in Housatonic. And it's falling into disrepair, and the rates, the water rates, don't pay for the kind of serious upgrades that are necessary to keep this system viable and sanitary, for that matter. So the town is wrestling with what to do, how to deal with this. And we it seems like as if we have a weekly story about this. But in any case,
we do
right.
Well, now, I mean, our managing editor, Shaw Israel Isaacson, is expressing his frustration, which I think a lot of people will feel, that the town has, gotten some proposals, has sort of develop the details of what a proposal should look like, but they're not sharing copies of either the town plan or their proposals as they promised they would at a meeting two weeks ago. So we are wondering why they're not giving it to us.
I think, we can guess. It's going to be quite expensive and difficult to repair this system.
Yeah.
And besides which, the legal issue is it's not a public system. It's not
not yet, or maybe never. But
you know, the town should release it because, once again, it's more information that goes into the public, and now the public understands a little more about the complexities. Because sooner or later, it's probably going to be later, but the town and the state are going to have to get together and solve the problem. And so you might as well.
Well, they're going to have to take this thing over by eminent domain.
Yeah, absolutely. And you might as well get all the information out there of what preliminary studies show, what possible cost studies show. Get it out there. I mean, right now. I mean, that's the ridiculous thing about this.
Well, the other thing, it's more than just the quality of water, but there was a big fire recently at a salvage yard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an automobile salvage yard in Housatonic, and the hydrants wouldn't function because the water pressure. So it's more than the quality of the water. It's also the quantity and the water pressure. And the fire hydrants in Housatonic were not adequate to fight fires. Because the water flow is too low.
Which is going to cost, the insurance rates in Housatonic are going to go sky high. Because
right.
of
And the more the town, the more the state wait, the more expensive it gets, because nothing gets cheaper when you wait. Nowadays, it just doesn't.
You're absolutely right.
And it's going to take at least a year or so, once a decision is made, or maybe 2 years, to put this thing together. So they might as well do it right now, because it's only going to get more expensive as the time you wait. I mean, it's very easy for me to sit here as a radio announcer, not involved in the finances. But it's so apparent that at this point, finances be damned. It just doesn't matter anymore. You know, you need to fix it. I mean, gosh.
Well, make it part of the town system.
Yeah.
You know, is to integrate it into the town water system is what needs to be done.
Right.
And that's why, you know, water systems and roads and so on are not privately owned anymore. Is it the resources that a private person owner may have are not sufficient to maintain the system.
And to point that out, I mean, the Aquarium Water Company, which owns most of the systems around here except for a few, which has purchased them, the Aquarium Water Company used to be by itself. But things get so expensive, Northeast Utilities bought them out because you need that kind of money to update these systems. You need big bucks, and I think the more people know about it, they'll understand it, and then force the town to action, because at this point, people don't care about the money anymore. They want clean water, they want values back for their houses, and they want to be healthy.
Now, this is such a throwback to times when, you know, the utilities were privately owned, roads were privately owned, for that matter. That's why they're called turnpikes. But, you know, those days are over.
You know, we sit here and we condemned what happened in Michigan. Well, this isn't quite the same thing, but it is in one way. It affects the health and welfare of the people receiving that water.
Yep.
So sooner or later, the state and the town and Great Barrier, they're just going to have to get together and bite the bullet and do it. It's got to happen. So.
Yes, I'm sure that we're going to be revisiting this story.
Oh, yeah. Until finally.
More times.
Yeah, until finally somebody files suit, really. Honest to gosh. That's
right.
It's going to take people getting together and putting together a broad-ranging lawsuit for some action to happen here. It looks that way anyway. Well, let's go from this, which can actually, you want to pull your hair out when you think about the Housatonic Water Works and what's been going on with it. We just went through Halloween, and I like your little title here. What's Halloween without visual mischief?
Yes.
Right.
So, you know, it's a tradition in Great Barrington that high school kids paint big posters, and they get hung up in the windows of stores downtown, and they did that again today, this year. But one of our local historians, Gary Levier, who writes a biweekly column for us called Then and Now, has shown us pictures of Halloween then and now, and there used to be a parade downtown Great Barrington with floats. I don't know when that was discontinued. It would be interesting to know, and he doesn't say that in his... but he's got pictures from, like, the 1970s of the Halloween floats, including one by Then and Now. I mean, a float by Then and Now, and which I guess was his float. So he's got pictures of his float then, plus some others. I mean, but they were really terrific. And then, of course, he's got some of now showing a couple of older women, or I guess one of them's a man, an older saying Halloween is alive and well in Great Barrington and fun for all ages.
Well,
so it is, although nobody comes to our house.
We're out in the country. I remember.
We don't get a single trick-or-treater, but, you know, the town was very lively on Halloween night.
You know, I remember back several years ago, I don't know if they still do this, during the holidays, the stores used to decorate their windows with holiday themes, and we broadcast from one of those stores. one of those windows one. And I don't know if they still do that this year, but that would seem to be a great idea for Halloween as well, to do something like that, to have a actual, give the students the front windows to put displays together for Halloween. I remember that they did it during the holiday season. And like I said,
the students here, they paint the windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost the same thing. Right?
And they actually have a contest about whose window decoration, you might say, is the best.
All right.
So it's a bit of fun competition. And so that's a tradition that's still hanging in there, at least in Great Barrington.
All right. We'll go on with your next story that you've picked out, and that is the examination of development projects that are underway, and just comes back to the entrepreneur who's shaking things up a little bit.
Well, yes, and this is the sixth of seven parts. We've had this series by a terrific writer and researcher named Bill Schein, who is writing a seven-part series about a developer named Ian Rash, who is very controversial. And it's hard to summarize this series. I mean, it's so complete, and I must say that we have gotten such great response to this. No one is doing this kind of in-depth research that he's doing for us. And this is really an exhaustive series about the state of what development is all about in a town like Great Barrington. And so today, this is installment number six that we posted today. He's talking not about downtown Great Barrington anymore, but about a very popular campground in South Egremont at Prospect Lake Park.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a sort of a middle-class campground. There have been families who have been coming for years.
Generations of families,
right,
have used this campground, right.
And Ian Rash bought it, and he kicked everybody off, and it's, and now he's building a sort of park model RVs. I mean, he's building like tiny houses on trailers that will be available for rent. But, of course, it's not going to be the same. The people who have been coming there for years feel a tremendous sense of loss. So it's very controversial. On the other hand, Ian points out that the whole irrigation system, the electrical system, everything was dangerous. He's actually making it better, but you can tell that to the people who've been going there for generations. It's not going to be the same, and so they're feeling the loss. And Bill has tried to be extremely balanced in this to explain what the various options have been for all of the projects and developments that Ian has undertaken. And it's hard to summarize these articles, but I would really recommend that anybody who's interested in housing and local development and what options are to read these articles. They're very long, but they're very complete. And there's one more where he will wrap this up.
You know, when you talk about an article like this, Andrew Rohrbach used to be a state representative, and a developer coming in and doing what he's doing and fixing things, that making apartments, doing he used to compare things like when you buy potato salad originally, okay, and you put it in your refrigerator, mm-hmm. It's a great thing, but then potato salad all of a sudden it goes bad. And ideas like that businesses put together and that governments put together, at first glance and at first put together, they're great. But then the more you look into it and the more you see, there's also the other side of the deal.
Right.
There's always another side of the deal. And the town, the developer, and the people have to weigh which is more important part of the deal. It's a tough call. It really is.
Well, it is, and nothing stays the same. I mean, Ian's argument. I mean, because he's been criticized, for buying properties across the region that formerly provided affordable options, and transforming them into something exclusive and expensive. The same criticism is, he's saying that the campground, just like aging downtown buildings, needed substantial investment, and the only way to pay for that investment is to charge more. So, who knows? I mean, no one else was undertaking the upgrades, that this campground required. So he is, but it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, it's like I said, you look into the deal, and there's always another side. Don't know,
right,
whether it's a bad side or a good side. There's always another side.
Right.
And the whole problem is that I'll take every community, every government agency, and all the communities. They've overlooked housing for so long. Affordable housing for so long, that this is where you wind up, and
right,
they have to take their share of the blame. They have to take their share of the blame.
Right.
And just like the guy that owns the Housatonic Water Company has to take his share of the blame, and sooner or later be forced to do something that maybe he doesn't want to do. So.
Right.
This is what's great about local journalism, though.
Oh, it is.
You open up avenues for people to look at these stories and get in-depth look at it without the government even doing it, when you get a writer that's hot on the case.
Yeah. No, I mean, these are really very interesting, and I must say it's very gratifying. Like last Saturday morning I went to the farmer's market, and four or five people came up to me and told me how much they were enjoying these articles, enjoying may not be the word, but how good they thought these articles were and how important they thought it was that we were exploring these issues. So, including one of the farmers who's been reading it. So, we talk about the importance of local journalism, but this kind of long-form investigative reporting is very difficult and expensive to maintain.
Yep.
Newspapers used to do it all the time. They could afford to have a reporter working for months on a story, or a team of reporters working for months on a story, but very few newspapers are doing any investigative or long-form reporting anymore. Because it is very expensive. I mean, to be paying somebody to spend months researching something. So we hope that our readers recognize the value of local journalism, not just The Edge, but every other outlet in this community, and support it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to move on here, once again, we'll move on from one story that's similar, okay, but not exactly that similar.
You mean Halloween?
No. Mickey Friedman.
Yeah.
Oh, Mickey, yes.
It is. I mean, Mickey is writing that he fears for our future.
Well, you call it Trumpophobia. He calls it Trumpophobia, and some people call it Trump syndrome on the other side. It's just facts are facts. I mean, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with him or not, this man has created something in this world that attracts people both for and against it.
Yes.
That man is Donald Trump.
And also that has violated some of the sacred trust that we have had in our government and each other.
Yeah. I mean, he's opened the door, and
Sure has. Whether he caused it
mainstream media is also a big part of why this has happened.
I think that he lives on arousing this kind of sentiment, and that's how he gets attention, and So, you know, it's personal with him, but I think it's destructive to society at large.
Well, mainstream media could have really evened it out during the Republic. I'm surprised more Republicans didn't complain during their primary. Every 1 hour or 2 hour Donald Trump speech was put on by all the major networks.
Yes,
and all the other candidates were shut out. And this is how he got a foothold. So I'm not going to blame Donald Trump by himself. The major media's outlets really.
No, they all make money off it. As soon as Trump went out of office, MSNBC and CNN and everybody, had their ratings drop, and they kept looking for Donald Trump, to get people watching again. And so it's a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we should explain what this is. I mean, this is an essay by Mickey Friedman, who also does in-depth articles for us. I mean, often book reviews, but also sort of political and social observations.
It's well researched.
Yes.
And he has lots of links to his sources that make this story even more complete and rich.
But he is talking about the fact that he had both a father and a therapist who shared a rather pessimistic view of humanity. Yeah. And as much as he tried to be more optimistic in the face of what's happening in the United States now, he has unfortunately also fallen into pessimism and fears for this country, as do we.
Well, what's interesting, the stories that we've talked about, most of them so far, about what writers and how important. The next story is the same thing, and that is a series of interviews with South Berkshire County residents asking local people how they're doing, what their problems are, what they think about. I think that's a great article to go along with the other two.
It is, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's... it's something that we've wanted to do for a long time, this sort of who we are. And Sheila is going to continue to do this, but she's just, selected six random people and asked them how they feel about what's happening. She's got somebody, a reverend from the First Congregational Church in Sheffield, somebody who a team leader and outreach educator at the Elizabeth Freeman Center, which is an organization that protects women. Somebody from the Great Barrington Ambulance Squad. Also, a real estate agent named Mandy Victor, who happened to be the person who sold this big downtown apartment house to Ian Rash, very controversially. Somebody who's the owner of a landscaping company, and an artist writer who used to live in that downtown building that got sold by Ian Rash. So it really is kind of a finger on the pulse of the county, and we hope that she'll continue doing this because one of the things that our goal for The Edge was, to report the news in a different way, but also to sort of reflect, truly reflect the depth and breadth of this interesting community. And this is, this group of stories that we talk about today certainly meets our goals, but this one by Sheila with his interviews with really the breadth and depth of this community, it's what we always wanted to do. And so we're very pleased to have this story.
All right, we only have 2 minutes left, and I want to get to Susan Wright, the story that she has written on voting.
On voting, right.
Sarah Wright.
This is a new columnist that we have.
The column is called Woman on the Verge.
Right.
And she picks subjects that are very not only controversial, but kind of essential to women. And this is her next installment.
her title is How Prepared Are You to Vote? Is a Sign of Civic Health. I mean, it's an unwieldy title, but she's saying, she is concerned about, our civic health.
Yeah.
And, you know, voting is prevention, treatment, and cure for so much of what ails us.
As a body politic.
Right, as a body politic. And it's an interesting story, and she talks about, you know, voter registration and equal rights and, you know, Vote ER, which was born at Mass General Hospital, to say that voting is a health issue.
Right.
You can, your